the right people take pay cuts to come and work for a company that offers that type of compelling vision, because why? There is a deep-seated human desire and need to be a part of something. And it's your job as a leader, it's your responsibility as a leader, it's your opportunity as a leader to give people something that they can be a part of. Hey there, if we have not yet met, my name's Alex Judd. I'm the founder of Path for Growth, and this is the Path for Growth podcast. Now, as a business, we exist to help impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. Well, we're in this series on the topic of vision. And in the previous episode, we talked about the fact that your vision is the answer to the question that everyone's asking, either subconsciously or consciously, where are we going? And the really undergirding principle behind all of this is that aim is essential. Human beings are aim-seeking creatures, and we constantly want to know, where am I going? And then within where am I going, we also want to know collectively and organizationally, where are we going? And in the previous episode on the hierarchy of vision, we talked about three ways that leaders often approach this topic of vision: survival, service, and then expansionary vision. We said that survival is just, how do we get to tomorrow? How do we keep the doors open? How do we keep the lights on? How do we stay in business? This is when you are strictly and only working in the business. You're running on the hamster wheel and you're just doing everything you can just to stay right where you are. And here's the deal. If you're new to business, you oftentimes have to start in survival mode because that's how you get this thing off the ground. The question isn't about you starting in survival mode. Things become really bad when you stay in survival mode. And so it's so crucial that you as a leader commit to taking intentional action to getting out of survival mode. And what you have to do that is you can't just look down running faster. You have to start to broaden your eyes upward and outward. And that brings us to the second stage of vision, which is service-based vision. Now, there's a lot that's really noble about service-based vision because it's rooted in a quality that's actually directly tied to the topic of healthy growth, because service-based vision is directly connected to contentment. It's the leader that has built a business that is running, that's operating, that has reached a desirable level of efficiency and effectiveness. And the leader kind of says, okay, well, my goal or my vision right now is just to serve the people we have the best we can where we are right now. And certainly, there's a lot that's good about this, right? It's rooted in contentment. It's rooted in gratitude. It's making sure that you're stewarding the resources that have been made available to you here in the present, and you're properly managing the people and all of the opportunities that have been granted to you. And in many ways, it's treating business not as a burden or an obligation and not being overly obsessed with the destination. It's just saying, man, I've been blessed with this business. And so there's a lot that's really good about it. But you can't, as a leader, operate solely and only in the service-based status of vision, where you're focused on just serving where you are right now. Because if you're not careful, you'll turn service into settling, and you'll confuse contentment with complacency. As a leader, it's your responsibility to be projecting your thoughts ahead to what is going to be going on in our business, in our industry, in the marketplace and the landscape as a whole, what's going to be going on in our team, not just right now, not just tomorrow, what's going to be going on in 6 months, what's going to be going on in 12 months. I had a mentor once tell me, Alex, it's your responsibility as the CEO to dedicate time to living mentally 18 months ahead of where your business currently is. Alfred North Whitehead said that the purpose of thinking is so that our thoughts die instead of us. And that's a pretty powerful idea, right? We have this unique capacity and ability as human beings to envision or imagine, means get an image of, a future that doesn't currently exist. And then we can actually be about the business of creating it. And so that really highlights the importance and value of what we're going to be talking about in today's episode, because that's what you do when you create an expansionary vision. The highest contribution of leadership is to catch and cast a compelling expansionary vision. What is that? Well, it's a future destination that lies just beyond the edge of your comfort zone. This is you trying to put yourself somewhere between 3 to 5 years of where the current organization is and saying, I'm just going to try and describe a future that we want to occur. Now, engaging with the topic of expansionary vision requires you as a leader to have one crucially important thing psychologically, and the word for that is agency. It requires you not to be a victim or a passive spectator of your circumstances, but it also requires you to know that I don't just get to impose my will on reality and define the future that I want. It requires you to look at the resources, the opportunities, the limitations, the landscape that God has put you smack dab in the middle of, and within all that, to exercise wisdom, which Tim Keller would call competence with regard to the realities of life, and to say, okay, in light of all the things that represent reality right now, what is a future that we desire, want, and feel called to create? And that actually highlights a really important topic. I believe it was Buchner that said that calling is where your deep-seated passion and the world's deep-seated need collide. So there's two pieces that I really want you to get out of this section of what is an expansionary vision. I want you to understand that you have agency, right? The world isn't happening to you. You get to be about the business of imagining this future that doesn't currently exist. And then you can actually take steps to try and create that. And that's such a wild thing that so often we leave underutilized. So what would it look like for you to exercise your imagination, for you to exercise creativity, for you not to just say, well, what's going to happen, but rather to say, what do we want to happen? So that's number one, you have agency. Number two is that this is a conversation about calling. And calling is not strictly what do you want in terms of your base fleshly, earthly desires. Calling is a conversation of what do you feel deeply and profoundly compelled to provide to the world around you. What grips your interest? What makes you remarkably upset? What are the things that you deeply care about? Who are the people that you deeply admire? Because admiration is not just this like casual thing that we should just wipe away, right? Admiration is often sometimes a great indicator of what we are actually called to step into ourselves. And so it's in that light that today I wanted to walk through 5 actions for creating an expansionary vision. But before we jump into those 5 actions, I just want to tell you about what an expansionary vision will give you and your business the ability to do. Number one, it's going to help you replace ambiguity with clarity. Like we already said, people all the time, whether they know it or not, are asking the question, where are we going? And when you choose to define the thing that you're saying yes to, you're also helping share the answer of all the other things that you're saying no to, and you're establishing focus. Within that, the second benefit is you're going to unify the team. You can't unify the team around a destination that's never been defined. We can't all say, we're just going to go on vacation, I'll see you there, and not describe where the vacation actually is. We need to be unified around a desired future because it's in light of that destination that we can start to define the strategy. It's also going to enable you to lead instead of react. Most people today confuse reaction with leadership. And they think that looking down and in at their organization and pointing out all the things that they don't want to happen, they don't like, means that they're being a good leader. That's not being a good leader. That's being a horrible boss. What does it look like to be a good leader? Cast a vision of what you want to occur, of what is desired, of what is possible, of what you believe for the organization, for the leaders within the organization, and for every individual team member in the role that they play. Dare to lift your eyes and the people's eyes around you 10 degrees above the horizon. Lead instead of react. And then finally, what does an expansionary vision do for you and your business? It creates a sense of urgency, ownership, and meaning within the team. First is urgency. What's amazing is the minute you say, man, this is the desired future that we're chasing, and this is the timeline that we want to reach it in, it's crazy how people start to get with the program. It's pretty wild how people want to get their act together. And this is actually rooted in a really optimistic and hopeful view of humanity that I actually believe is true. Most people, most of the time, are just doing the best that they can. And the minute you say, man, our back's against the wall and we're trying to reach this goal or this destination 3 years from now, and man, it's going to be hard and we're all going to have to show up and we're all going to have to be our best. And man, the leader that you are today, the team member that you are today, the way that you work today, it's good for today. But man, it's not going to be good enough to get us to where we need to be 3 years from now. And so we individually all have to be on this leveling up track, this growth journey track. Oh my gosh. The right people will be so engaged by that. I have literally seen the right people take pay cuts to come and work for a company that offers that type of compelling vision. Because why? There is a deep-seated human desire and need to be a part of something. And it's your job as a leader, it's your responsibility as a leader, it's your opportunity as a leader to give people something that they can be a part of. It's going to create urgency, ownership, and meaning for everyone within the team. And so with that, the next question becomes, okay, how do we go about creating this vision? We're going to give you 5 actions. And then out of these 5 actions, we're also going to provide you with a resource that if you really want to roll up your sleeves and work on this on your own or with your leadership team, we're going to tell you about how to do that. Action 1, define your non-negotiables. So we said that vision is the answer to the question, where are we going? But that's actually only one of the 3 questions you have to answer as a business leader. And it's not the first question. The first 2 questions are actually, why do we exist and what do we stand for? Why do we exist should be answered in your company's aspirational mission, and what do we stand for should be answered in your organization's core values. Why is it so crucial that we go in that order? Mission, values, vision. And this order is how we lay it out within the Path for Growth Fundamentals. That's what we provide within our coaching program, is a systemized 12-step process for creating the structure necessary to practice healthy growth. And we always start with mission and values, and then eventually we get to vision. Why is that so crucial? Because if you don't know why you exist and what you stand for, casting an audacious and daring and big vision is not leadership. It's recklessness. And the reason why is because it's so crucial for the culture of your team, for the way that you serve your customers, and for your own personal soul that you establish the rules of the game and the boundaries within which you're going to operate before you start to aggressively chase some goal. Here's what I want you to know. The greatest creativity always occurs within a set of predefined constraints. I'm going to say that again. The greatest creativity always occurs within a set of predefined constraints. We can see this play out in any sport, but let's think about college football since that's going on right now. The object of the game is to win, and the way that you do that is you score more points than the other team, either by kicking field goals or getting in the end zone, right? And we know that that's true. We know that that's the end objective. But within that objective, there are boundaries and rules that we have to adhere by, and that's what ensures the game actually becomes a playable game instead of chaos. You want your business to operate as a playable game where the team members within the organization, and you being one of those team members, understands, okay, these are the boundaries that I need to operate in to make winning worthwhile. It's one of the most devastating things that I'm sad to say I've witnessed before. Business leaders and teams win a game that they didn't actually want to win because they never established boundaries or purpose for why they were playing. It's so crucial that you as an organization know why you exist and that it's a motive that you and your team believe in and have operationalized. And then it's absolutely essential that you define and guard and cultivate your organization's core values as the non-negotiable lines that you and the team are unwilling to cross. Because it would be better to maintain the soul of your business and not reach the desired goal than to reach the desired goal, but to lose your soul in the process. Action one is to define the non-negotiables. Action two is to choose the stakeholders. So anytime we come to this topic of vision, one of the first questions that we often get within the Path for Growth coaching community is, okay, well, who do I include in that meeting? How do I decide who's speaking into the vision? And I'll never forget, this was a long time ago at a previous job that I had where I was working with a leader and he sent me a message and he said, Alex, I'm putting together my vision. I'm so excited about it and I'm gonna put it all on paper and I'm almost there. And I said, well, that's awesome. I'm so happy that you're bought into this idea of having a vision for the team and all of that. I said, how did you come about the vision that you're landing on? He said, I sent a Google survey to the entire team and asked them, what should we aim at? And his heart was right, but I actually believe that the process was totally wrong. We can think that the best thing that we need to do is send out a survey to everyone and make sure then that everyone's ideas are included in the vision. But here's the deal. The whole goal and purpose of vision is that it gives you a sense of focus. And therefore, I would really advise that you're not going to do vision by committee. Why is that so important? Well, it just makes sense. It's operating in wisdom that some of these people may just be interns on your team that may be there for less than 9 months. And some of these people are thinking truly that they're going to be in the business for the next 20 years. And are you really gonna weigh those people's inputs the same? No, you're probably not, right? And so what does wisdom do? Well, wisdom is really intentional about getting the right stakeholders in the room to define the vision. So what we've already discussed is that vision by committee is not the answer. What should we focus on? Well, vision should be informed by the team and determined by the leaders. Obviously, we don't want to create the vision for the business in complete ignorance of what the team wants, what the team desires, what the team thinks, and also where the customers are at. And so we need to make sure we've got our thumb on the pulse of the essential functions of the business, of the different departments in the business, of the culture within the business, and then also the customers and what the marketplace is asking the business to be. But then beyond that, we're going to get a group of leaders together in a room to say, okay, where are we going to take all these things? We have all these options of what we could say yes to, what should we say yes to, and what are we committing to right now? Now, as you start to think about the stakeholders, there's a principle that I want you to remember. The right meeting with the wrong people is the wrong meeting. And I probably don't have to explain that much because you've probably experienced it before. You can have the best agenda in the world and the best process in the world, but if you don't have the right people in the seats to walk through that agenda, you're not gonna get desirable outcomes. So what needs to be true about the people that are in the room? Well, I've got a list of 5 criteria that I want you to consider. Number one, this person exemplifies the culture of our organization. You do not want people in the room, regardless of their position or authority, that isn't on board with the core values, isn't on board with the mission, and isn't really with the program in terms of the culture that you are trying to create. Because you don't want that person to influence the future of the organization. You want the culture to be exemplified by the organization's leaders, and that needs to be true in this room. Number two, this person has a unique perspective that they will bring to the table. This is really crucial. Number one, they need to have a unique perspective, so you don't want to double up too many perspectives in the room because that will make the room really disproportionately weighted in terms of the perspectives that are being offered. But the second piece that's really important here is you need to trust that they're going to offer that unique perspective. And so obviously that goes along with you setting expectations for your team of really saying like, hey, if you're going to be in this room, I want to challenge you. Like, if you have something to say, you got to say it. That's why you're in here. It's not to sit and spectate. It's to participate. It's to engage. It's to contribute. And so don't just be a consumer, be a contributor. You got to have a unique perspective and you got to bring it to the table. Next, this person is passionate about the organization and will engage in the wrestle. So I want people, whenever I'm making strategic decisions about the future of the organization, who will wrestle with me, who will push back, who care enough to stand up for what they believe in, who are going to fight for what they believe in, who are a little bit stubborn and are unwilling to move and aren't overly impressed by my ability to talk a good talk. That's the type of people that I want in the room. And so get people that are passionate about the organization and they're willing to engage in wrestling and argument that's constructive and productive. Two more, this person is invested in the future of the business, the mission, and the team. Now, here's what I want to warn you against. It can be really tempting whenever you start to create this group for this meeting to look for what I've heard an organization before called lifers and to say, I want people in the room that are lifers. They're going to be with us for life, right? They're not going anywhere. And that is just a pretty wild expectation and burden to place on people to say, if you're in this room, it's because you've committed to being here for the rest of your life. Golly, I mean, I don't know that I would sign up for that, right? And I don't know that I should ever expect my team to sign up for that because I don't know what my life's going to look like. It doesn't mean that I don't want to be here right now, and it doesn't mean that I don't plan to be here in the future. It just means it's a pretty big deal whenever I commit my life to something, and I really kind of keep that reserved to, like, I don't know, my marriage and my family, and that's like it, right? And so to have that expectation is probably not healthy because you're overreaching, and it actually may counteract what you want because what you're looking for there is loyalty. But if people feel like you're holding them with such a tight grip that loyalty is the only option, they're not going to feel freedom. And people don't want to be loyal to something that doesn't offer them freedom. But here's what you do want to make sure. You want to make sure that the people have an owner's mentality and not a renter's mentality. Think about that. I'm sure you've rented a property at some time in your life. And you know that when you rent a property, you don't really make it look perfect. You don't really go above and beyond to make it feel like home. You don't really get all of the best furniture to fit that place. You don't really care as much about the maintenance issues or the upkeep of the place. Why? Because you know, well, I'm not going to be here for a very long time. This isn't really mine. Conversely, when you own a property, when you own a house, you're like, oh man, I'm not sure that I'm going to be here forever, but I'm here right now and I'm here for the foreseeable future and I'm going to treat this place like it's mine. That's what it looks like to have an ownership mentality. And those are the people that you want in the room. And I don't think I really need to give you a checklist because my bet is that as I'm describing that, and even as I say the phrase ownership mentality, you've got faces popping up in your mind. That's what I want you to look for. That's what I want you to be committed to having in the room with you. And then finally, number five, this person will leave the room as a leader who is committed to the vision. So we don't want any people that are skeptics that are kind of crossing their arms and digging their heels in as it relates to the vision. We want people in the room as our stakeholders that we know, man, once we define this thing as a team and once we walk through this process, like we are doing this together. And we're going to operate in the best interest of this organization. And we've defined that this vision is in the best interest of the organization. So we are going to go in this direction together. The how is up for grabs and it's up for discussion and it's up for great, vibrant, constructive, productive argument. But we are going to this destination together. So let's review the five criteria for the stakeholders one more time. This person exemplifies the culture of our organization. This person has a unique perspective that they will bring to the table. This person is passionate about the organization and will engage in the wrestle. This person is invested in the future of the business, the mission, and the team. This person will leave the room as a leader who is committed to the vision. I have seen people do the process that we're about to talk about with one person in the room. I've also seen people do it with 5 to 10 people in the room. what you want to make sure is that you've got the right people in the room. And those criteria are the lens through which I would advise you walk through. Let's go to action number three, change the scenery. Here's the deal. Something changes in people's minds and people's hearts whenever you change three things. Change your place, change your pace, and change your space, being your headspace. So change your place. I would recommend going to a co-working office or renting an Airbnb or renting out a room in a hotel or something like that and just saying, we're going to operate in a different place, because something about changing our physical scenery changes the way that we think. It also removes distractions. We're also going to change our pace. I want you to challenge the people that are in the room with you, your stakeholders, to turn off their phones, to put their computers away, and to say, we are going to slow down so that moving forward, we can speed up. And today, I want us to remove all of the working in the business, day-to-day distractions, so that we can lift our head above the business and think and dream about vision. Let's really get in the headspace of 3 to 5 years from now. And that connects to changing your space. Tell them, we are not asking the question how. I've heard someone describe this before as the tyranny of how. We are not asking the question how right now. We're asking the question of why and what. We're thinking broadly about the future that we want to create. And I want you to get yourself in that headspace. And that's easy for some people and exciting for some people. For some people, it's really challenging because the first question they want to ask is, how are you going to do that? That's not the question that we're asking in this meeting. And so there's a few actions that you can ask everyone to take as you prepare for this meeting. Get everyone to turn off their email. Get everyone to turn off their phone. Maybe start with prayer or meditation to center the conversation. Drink lots of water because that just sets the tone for health. Create a safe environment where people can speak up and disagree and offer feedback. And then also I would say, like, at lunchtime, whenever you break midday, maybe eat healthy and wholesome food instead of like the largest cheeseburger and french fries you can find, because then the afternoon when you're going to be deciding on your vision is not exactly going to be very constructive and productive. It's probably going to be sluggish and slow. And so those are a few things you can do. Biggest thing I want you to know from change the scenery is change your place, change your pace, and change your space. Okay, let's go into the final two actions. Action four is, once you're in that room, you want to unravel the dream. And so what this is you're going to just start with a very broad timeline. You can say maybe over the course of 10 years. 10 years is really hard to see. There's so much that can be accomplished in 10 years. It's always good to remind people of that quote. People often overestimate what can be accomplished in 10 days, and people often underestimate what can be accomplished in 10 years. So much can be accomplished in 10 years, and you want to remind your team of that. And then you want to say, okay, this is not an exercise in what's probable. This is an exercise in what's possible. We are not going to focus on how, we are going to focus on wow. And we're just going to say, what are all the things that if we were able to do them over the course of the next 10 years, it would make the next 10 years a grand slam, both in terms of process and destination. What's the type of stuff that if we were to work on it, and if we were to contribute ourselves to it, it would just make this place so radically meaningful and exciting that it would be the type of thing we would love to be a part of. And so you really want to challenge people to lift their eyes and lift their hearts to think broadly about what could be possible. And so I want to give you some questions that I like to ask in this section of the meeting. What type of organization do we want to be known as? What do we feel called to do with the business we've been given? If we knew we couldn't fail, what future would we chase? And there's actually a contrary question to that one. If we knew we would fail, what future would still be worth chasing anyway? You could think on that one for a while, because that's going to really offer you some answers that would say, like, man, this is a process that I would be really excited about. What does our mission say about the things we should be doing 10 years from now? What difference do we want to make in the world? What difference do we want to make in our world? What do we want to be true in 10 years for our team, for our customers, for ourselves? What's the dream that God has given us that we feel responsible for attending to? What would this dream enable us to contribute to our community? Now, you can use those questions. Those are some fine questions. But the biggest thing that I want you to do is I want you to ask some questions. And I want you to get people to think really, really creatively and take some time to journal on their own about what is possible for this organization and what would make this an absolute grand slam. Again, in terms of destination, like it's going to be really cool when we get there, but also in terms of process, like this is really worth working on. And the goal there is just to get the desires of our heart out into the open, to get them onto the whiteboard or to get them onto paper, or to get them out into conversation, because it's out of that that we're then going to ask the question, okay, what do we want to focus on now? And that brings us to action five, which is to distill the vision. And as it relates to distilling the vision, there's a wide variety of formats that you could use to do this. Jim Collins describes the creation of what he calls a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal. And that's a 3 to 5 year goal that is 50 to 70% achievable. There's organizations like EOS that describe the 3 year, the 5 year, and the 10 year vision that you're going to be working towards. I'll tell you, after looking at a bunch of different books and a ton of content and doing a lot of study on this topic of vision for our team, whenever we did this for ourselves 3 years ago now, I really wanted to create a format that was both qualitative and quantitative. I didn't want just a metric because I just thought to myself, people aren't really just inspired by a metric. And I do like the simplicity of it and the focus of it, but I want to describe a bigger, broader vision of what's possible and what's true. And so we created a format that we called the Vision Charter. And what this is it's a vision statement that is supported by 5 to 7 vision pillars. And each of those pillars has a series of success statements that define what winning looks like. Now, I could try to describe this to you on audio, but I think that would be really difficult. And so here's what I want you to know. If you're an impact-driven leader that owns or runs a business, we actually have a series of lessons focused on the fundamentals for healthy growth. And the final lesson walks you through a step-by-step process for the creation of a vision charter. And it gives you really in-depth examples, tips, and practices for making sure that you create a robust document that is quantitatively and qualitatively clear so that you can give something to your team that everyone can be unified around. And here's the deal. We're actually offering this lesson to anyone that owns or runs a business right now for free as part of our coaching community free trial. This is a 14-day free trial, and you can literally go and download the lesson for vision and workbook. And if that's all you want to watch, that's totally fine. But I think you'll be really interested in all of the 12 fundamentals for healthy business, because it's really a step-by-step process for making sure that you as an organization practice healthy growth. So if you're interested in creating a vision charter and you own or run a business and you're impact driven, I'd encourage you to apply for that 14-day free trial. You can click the link that's in the show notes of this episode, or you can go to pathforgrowth.com to apply. Regardless of whether you use that format or not, what I'm going to challenge all of you to do is to apply yourself to defining an expansionary vision. Because once you do that, you're going to be set up to engage with what we're going to talk about in our next episode in this series, which is the responsibilities of a leader to catch that vision, to cast that vision, and then to coach that vision and develop people along the way. Y'all know this. We're rooting for you. We're praying for you. We want to see you win. Remember, my strength is not for me. Your strength is not for you. Our strength is for service. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.